Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is an audio engineer who has worked with artists such as A Perfect Circle, Incubus, Slipknot, Meghan Trainor, The Rock on Tours, Papa Roach, Paul McCartney, Katy Perry, John Mayer, The Eagles, and many others. In this episode, we discuss his journey from helping at-risk youth to where he is today, the effect of intense and stressful working conditions on mental health, advocating for yourself, and the importance of transparency in the music industry, especially between peers. Here is my conversation with mental health professional turned audio engineer, Danny Batterini. Danny, thank you so much for joining me on the Tour Life Podcast. I'm really excited to hear about your history because you did not always work as an audio engineer. You used to work in mental health. Is that correct?
Correct.
So tell me a little bit about that and how in the world you ended up being an audio engineer.
Well, you know, the music business isn't so different than the mental health industry. In fact, I find the mental health industry to be a little more sane most of the time. But I got a sociology degree, studied social deviance, a lot of social drug policy at UC Santa Barbara. When I graduated, I moved to the Bay Area with my band. And the first place to offer me a job was a mental health treatment facility that takes care of teenage boys. And I ended up working there for 8 years. So that was sort of the beginning of it. And I knew I always wanted to do something different, but that time was really valuable for me to grow up, number one, and realize, wow, how lucky I am. And just to learn a lot of the people skills, I think, needed to be successful in life.
Did you know what you wanted to go into when you were pursuing your bachelor's?
No. I wanted to be, I wanted to play in a band.
So why'd you get your sociology degree?
I thought college was important, and I was playing in a band at the same time, and just sort of the life experience of it was something that my parents really pushed me towards, and I'm glad they did. I think it actually probably kept me from maybe having a more successful musician career. I don't know, maybe the terrible songs I was writing stopped my musician career, but it was really important to just get the experience, not so much necessarily the class, but the social experience of being at a college.
Yeah, I can definitely agree that college is an experience, and it's one that, you know, like most experiences, are valuable in one way or another. And so it did lead you into working in a place that you clearly weren't expecting to work at.
No, I didn't even know what it was. You know, I didn't know what a group home was. I didn't have really any, I knew people went to therapy, but this was sort of a whole different scene. And I really liked it. I liked the people I worked with. I loved the kids. I mean, they were the most fun part because they're honest. You know, they come from a terrible place most of the time and they've had a really hard time, and you know, you're there to help them. And I found it very rewarding and stressful and a little crazy making at times.
That's interesting because I dated a monitor engineer for a really long time. And one of the things that I noticed about him was that he didn't say a lot, but he seemed to really like get people. And it kind of made sense because that's kind of what he did on stage, right? Like he was able to communicate with the artists without even really like communicating in the normal
quote unquote normal way. Is, do you think that the way that you communicate and the way that you do things on stage and the way that like your relationships have developed have anything to do with the things that you've learned in your previous experience?
Absolutely. I mean, assertive communication is really valuable, and listening, and you know what, all we are doing is meeting needs, and the artist is going to respond to us more favorably if they feel better about us. It has so much more to do with how they feel than it has to do with how it sounds. Because a lot of these guys, they've played in clubs. They know when it sounds terrible most of the time, no matter what we do. And I think that, I think they're used to that, but if they're having fun and they have confidence in us, then it works. And I found that, like, I mean, I've been on stage some of the time at soundcheck just going, this is awful. I don't know what to do. I'm trying and I'm just real. I'm going, yeah, it's terrible in here. Good luck today. You know, let me know. I'll try to change it. I've been trying. I can't, you know, I'm doing my best. And they respond better to that than somebody who's, you know, kind of cowers and gets scared and worries about it too much. I mean, some of them would rather you just don't worry about it. And it is psychology.
Yeah. And how does that relate to, you know, the interactions you have with people where they seek help? They're actually like in a home seeking help.
I mean, it completely relates. You know, I mean, the kids I worked with, they were, you know, mostly had failed foster care and were in danger of really just falling out of the system. So it, you know, the idea there was to build a relationship with them and to build a functional relationship, because what they'd been taught is to sabotage the relationship. And they did. They tried every way possible. They, of course, don't trust you, come from an abusive background. And we had to kind of check our own internal process and what triggers us, because the kids would figure that out. And we had to always try to stay functional and healthy in this situation. And so applying that to being a monitor engineer, I mean, I've had guys on stage. I had a guy last year just screaming at me, and it was all I could do but to not laugh at him, because the guy's got problems, and I knew it had nothing to do with me. So at the end of the day, I was like, oh, this is great. You know, you're on stage in front of a few thousand people. Why is it? I understand you're having a hard time, but like, I've worked with kids who had a terrible upbringing, and you're just a spoiled musician. So like, whatever, let me know when you're done yelling and tantruming and I'll try to figure something out. So I think that it absolutely relates. But most musicians are they're actually pretty calm. They're pretty normal and they get it. And most of them talk to you normally. And then, so it's easy. You just do what they're asking and you just figure out ways to meet their needs. And that's not always just musical. It's how does it feel? What is their experience out there? Because what I'm hearing isn't the whole experience. In any way I can, you know, facilitate that, I do.
Yeah, and that definitely seems like something that would give you some perspective, right? Seeing that with kids, because that I think the outside world may look at as troublesome because, you know, they didn't, you know, they ended up there, right? And sure. So, you know, through dealing with those people, what did you discover about them that is true, that you think is true about like all humans?
I mean, we're all damaged, right? Like, we've all had difficult times. We're all dealing with difficult psychological situations. I mean, especially now, pandemic, craziest election I've seen in my lifetime, which is going on right now. And so when you really, if you can approach a situation, and even especially a tense situation, with what does this person need and what are they communicating? I mean, we really learned that with the kids, because you'd have a 13-year-old tantruming like a 6-year-old. And they're yelling at you about something, but what is it that they really need? And so if you anticipate needs, you're going to be much more successful. And again, all of this applies to what I do in the music business. If I can make something sound a certain way, or I know this room is going to give us problems with something, and I can communicate that with the rest of the audio team and we can fix it before the musician gets there, then great. Nobody gets yelled at.
Yeah, I think it really is about listening and being able to translate using your experiences, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
When it comes to mental health, there's a conversation that we've been having a lot, especially since March, where people are starting to, you know, I guess since you have time, since you're not on the road, yeah. People are like, oh, I guess we could talk about stuff. And so what's happening is that, you know, I personally have been having a lot of conversations with people, and I've witnessed a lot of conversations where people are starting to be more open about their mental health status. And also there seems to be a lot of people wanting to help, to provide solutions. And I feel like that could kind of get us into a little bit of a situation when we're trying to provide solutions right away to problems that we never really talked about in the past. So what are some of the things that you have seen come up and that you've been able to identify because you've had this experience in the past?
Well, I mean, one of the things that I had to do when I stopped working in mental health full time is I had to stop psychoanalyzing everybody because, you know, I was working whatever, 60, 80 hours a week, and it's just constant therapy. It's constant psychoanalyzing the kids, the adults that I supervised, myself. So I had to get out of that. But I still have, you know, a lingering effect of it because I did it for so many years, and I see it on the road, and it's difficult because you see people who are having trouble at home with their family, people who never see their kids. So it's just difficult. And I see the difficulties with that. Of course, there's alcohol, drug addiction, and those sorts of things. So I would love to help. When I first started touring, I tried to be more helpful. I don't do it as much now because that's just not my role. I'm pretty skeptical about a lot of the ideas that people have with this. This is maybe where my significant other has described me as opinionated. And I think that, yeah, we're not talking about the problems, number one. And number two, I haven't heard a solution that I think is really viable. I mean, talking about, I don't think people are looking at the core of the mental health problem on the road, which is working conditions. Because I think that's where it's all deriving from. We're working under, it's crazy stress, crazy long hours, and people aren't sleeping. And if you don't address that, then how are we going to fix people's mental health is my question.
Yeah, yes, absolutely. And so let's take it back a little bit though. How have you been seeing people try to address this issue?
I haven't a lot. I've heard people talk about we need to do something about it and we need to put a charity together or we need to figure out how we're going to help. But I don't know exactly how. I mean, I know people on the road who do yoga. I know people who meditate. You know, I think that's great. I know people who choose to not party all night on their day off. I think that's great. I think, you know, FaceTime is really valuable to stay connected with loved ones. But as far as an overall way of dealing with, you know, what happens to us after a 6 or 8 week tour and we come home and we're just a mess for a few days, I've seen a lot of writing about that and awareness of that, but I haven't heard any solutions to that. Maybe I'm not paying attention because I'm not on social media, though. So I certainly could have missed a lot.
Well, I don't think you're wrong at all. And I think part of that goes back to the fact that, one, it wasn't really being talked about, right? And at that point, when it was being talked about, when people individually recognized that maybe like I need to take more time to myself, or maybe I should take up yoga because it'll help calm my stress. It's very much placing like the burden on the individual. And now I feel like because we have so many people that are finally starting to speak out, we kind of need to shift that burden away from the individual toward the actual structure of the way that people live their lives when they're in the industry. And I think that's what you're speaking about, correct?
yes, I think there is a shared responsibility between the individuals working in it and, I guess you could say, management, or, you know, the artists and everybody who's in charge of what's going on, and especially the accountants.
Yeah, and that is a difficult thing, because the nature of the industry is to kind of, people have referred to it as a pirate ship.
Yes, absolutely.
So how do you gather, how do you get all the pirates to work together to...
Well, we already do, though. We already work together. I mean, it's a, you know, you have people from all different political backgrounds, socioeconomic backgrounds, I guess, and ethnic backgrounds, although it is still pretty white male dominated. But people from all over the country, all over the world, we have to come together, because soundcheck's at 3 and there's a show tonight. So if we don't figure out a way to come together and do it fast, then nothing's happening and we don't get paid, right? So I think you have a group of people who get things done possibly more efficiently than most groups. And under circumstances that are not easy a lot of the time. I mean, if anybody who's ever toured South America knows that.
The people are there. You know how to work together. Some people are talking about what the issue on the individual level is. And so is that conversation of like the structural issues with the industry, are those being talked about? And what are some of those things, those underlying issues that are at the root that are really leading to all of these symptoms, which are the depression that you get from coming home from tour and the super high divorce rate and the alcoholism and all of these things? Those are symptoms of a much bigger underlying problem. What do you think is underlying?
I think working conditions are really, really difficult. I think that people on the road and work an unreasonable amount of hours. I think it's dangerous. And I think budgets are being cut more and more. People are often asked to do more things. I think sleep plays a major, major factor when you look at mental health for anybody. And I personally struggle to sleep on a bus. So I can't put that on everybody else, because a lot of people seem to do just fine sleeping on a bus or in a different bed or a moving bed every night. But I am not convinced all of the time that their brain is resetting. And so to dive into that real quick, I think you don't reset every night. So that's the depression at the end of the tour, is you do 6 weeks or 8 weeks worth of resetting that you should be doing every night. You do that all at once when you come home. So I think that really leads to serotonin depletion and depression. But again, I think the core issue is the working conditions. And I'm not going to blame, you know, I'm not waving my hammer and sickle flag here. I'm not handing out communist manifestos to everybody. I'm not even advocating to form a union or anything like that. I'm just advocating that people in charge do the right thing. And I think they do, some of them do and some of them don't. So, you know, simple things such as, well, if somebody in my family dies and I go home for a few days from the tour, do I still get paid? I mean, oftentimes the answer is no. If you fire me tomorrow, but I'm booked for the next 2 weeks, do I get paid? In my situation, the answer to that was no. Even though I fought, was like, well, I turned down other work. I was supposed to be here, you know. If we have a day off, are you buying the hotel room the night before? No. So the day off is now we get into the hotel at 4 p.m. on our day off, and we just have time to get dinner and sleep, and we're back to work, working an 18-hour day tomorrow. So I think that those things really add up. And again, some tours do. Some tours are going to look out for you. You know, if I ask for special little things, they just do it, and they spend more money to do it. And I think that it starts at the top, and when they're acting with integrity, when you have tour managers and production managers and potentially promoters who would rather do the right thing than make an extra $500, I think you're addressing the mental health situation of the people working there.
And it sounds like it's really a cultural thing.
Yes. Absolutely. I was having that thought this morning when I was thinking about what I was going to say. There's, you know, there's a cultural responsibility on a lot of us who work out there. There's this idea that we have to be tough. And, you know, you might get injured on the job and, well, are they going to, is workman's comp going to pay for this? I've never had a bad experience with that. Fortunately, I've had companies and artists do the right thing in those situations, but you never know. And if I sprain my ankle and I go home for 2 weeks because I can't work, do I get paid? So there's not a lot of job security. And maybe I'm more sensitive to it because I'm a monitor engineer and we're 20 minutes from getting fired on a good day. But it's still those questions are, you don't know the answers a lot of the time until you're in that situation. So there are no contractual agreements to address that. And I think that makes the working situation more tense for people.
There was something really interesting that I remember from one of the Tour Management 101 webinars. They were talking about compensation, and they were talking about also sometimes you don't even know who you're going to work for. Like the management company contacts you and, you know, and offers you something, asks you if you're available, but they don't always tell you for whom.
That's all of the time practically. Oh, who the artist is?
Yeah, who the artist is. Yeah.
I'm not sure if I've had that necessarily, but it's usually really vague. Like, are you available? Okay, great. It's like, did I just commit to this? Like, we haven't talked pay. I don't know what your tour is like, you know, and then you get hired to do one job as a monitor engineer, and all of a sudden the production manager is making you, you know, pack the lighting truck. And it's like, well, hold on. Where do we draw the line here? I'm not, you know, I don't want to not help the lighting guys. Obviously, they're understaffed, but I didn't make that decision. So there are a lot of very vague things. It's interesting. I'm interested to listen to that and what they said about the pay and how they structure it.
Yeah, it's really interesting because they have a bunch of different episodes where they do like deep dives into specific things. But something that, you know, really, really, I guess it's weird because it doesn't super surprise me because I almost already have an image of the music industry as being this like, it's like it's a privilege to work in it. So you kind of just have to deal with whatever bullshit they throw at you.
Yes.
But like, that's not okay.
No, it's not okay. And, you know, I think people don't stand up for themselves enough. And I know there are people in the industry who don't like, they'll call me a complainer. But hey, if you're serving me shit food and I can't go anywhere else to eat, I might make you miserable. And I have even sat down and said, until you give me food, I'm not doing anything. I don't care. And you know, like, what are they going to do? Fire me? Okay, great. Like, we'll find another gig. I think that if you act with integrity, you have to act with integrity and you have to draw the line. You have to advocate for yourself or nobody else will. And I see so many people who just sort of roll over and deal with it. And that's fine if they choose to do that. I can't, you know, that's their choice. But I'm not going to. Like, you're not going to feed me awful food or not feed me, especially on time, if I'm going to be there all day. Like, these are the unspoken agreements. And I think you have to act. You have to meet those expectations for us. I mean, we go in on no sleep and do these gigs and work hard. And that's great. We choose to be there. I'm not a victim in this. But at the same time, you have to uphold your end of the agreement. Or, I don't know, the pirate ship might mutiny. We might need a new captain today. You know, I wouldn't have a problem doing that. I've never had to. I've had a lot of good leaders. I've had a lot of people who, production managers who've made good decisions. And I've seen some really evil ones.
And, you know, going back to that idea of the culture, right? So there's a side of the culture where either you're one of the people, like me, I was a teacher and I resigned because they gave me they told me that that the superintendent was going to allow me to pay $1,400 a month to keep my insurance if I took an unpaid leave and didn't resign. And I basically told him to fuck off and I quit. But because it's like, I don't want to work when I can get COVID and die. So no. But I did that out of privilege. I did. And there were a lot of people who couldn't do that because of necessity, right? Because that was their livelihood and they didn't really feel like they had the option. Now, I can understand multiple sides of the situation, and I can try to put myself in everybody's shoes. But at what point do you have, I mean, look at these people who have fought for rights. I mean, you know, today's election day when we're recording this. You know, the reason that many people even have the right to vote is because people, activists had their legs broken in order to be able to cast a ballot.
Yeah. Small groups of people got together to make change. I was fortunate to study under one of the founders of the Students for Democratic Society while I was at UC Santa Barbara. And we spoke a lot about that.
And I think, you know, so that's the burden of, you know, the worker, right? And, but then you also have the culture of those who are the decision makers. And something that has been really refreshing and nice to see, at least from the small amount of people that I've spoken to that are in like the tour management, tour director positions, is that they do seem to care. But I have heard there's a lot who don't, right? So there's people on both sides of the coin. Yeah. But you know, I always wonder about peer pressure, right? It's like, why is it so easy to peer pressure people into doing the wrong thing, but not into doing the right thing?
Humans are such followers, aren't they? Makes me sick sometimes. I agree with what you're saying. I have had managers who I think could care less about us. And I have had great managers in this industry. I'm very fortunate because I think they do care. You bring an issue to them and they do the right thing, at least most of the time. Like, I'm not holding anybody to an unrealistic standard. I'm a human. I've made mistakes. I don't do the right thing all the time. I try, but sometimes I'm an asshole. And sorry, okay, I apologize. Well, that's fine. There has to be wiggle room for that. There has to be wiggle room for an apology and realizing we have a giant pirate ship. There might be 100 crew members. There might be 20 trucks and 8 buses. Well, you know what? Sometimes things are not going to fall your way, and we have to be willing to deal with that. That's just life. So I don't want to portray a picture that I'm always blaming the people in charge. You know, I think we hold a responsibility to work with them to do that. But some of them suck.
Yep. Oh yeah, tell me about it. You know, that brings us to another point about what is it that we can actually do in order to make it so that people do the right thing. What is missing?
Human conscience. It's so relevant on election day. I can't. Anyway, I think that we have to do the right thing. We have to stand up for ourselves. I mean, one of the things you had emailed me some questions and, you know, what do you say to the people who are aspiring to do this is stand up for yourself. You know, make a choice to leave sometimes if it's not right. Don't do it angry. You don't have to do it rude. But, you know, recently I was in a position to where it's a strange time, right? There's not a lot of work going on. I was fortunate to get some work. There was a little situation with pay and they weren't going to pay me what I was asking. And I said, fine, I'm not doing it, you know, because, and I'm fortunate that I can do that. I live in a cheaper place. I'm financially responsible. I know some people don't have that decision and that's fine, but I didn't like what was going on and I stood my ground. I got my way, which was nice. And I think ultimately what happened is people in management decided that this was the right thing to do. So I respect that. But we have to stand our ground. We have to find ways to bring these issues to management, to tour managers. Sometimes they don't know. You know, they're booking these hotels in these places. They're staying with the band. We're staying in a different place. And it's just a shithole. And they didn't know. You know, they were trying to book you in a hotel where it's next to restaurants. They're trying to make it the best day off possible for the crew. And they just got the wrong hotel. Like, what are you going to do? Get mad at them? No, let them know. Have an open dialogue. Build a relationship with these people you're working with and find a way to communicate with them that helps the situation.
Yeah, it sounds like communication is the key word, as it typically is when we have problems.
Well, and the relationships are really important too. I mean, I have a gig I was just doing, the production manager. We've been working together for over 5 years. He got kind of mad at me about something. We kind of went at it and then we sort of laughed. Like, what are we doing? We're so happy to be working. Why are we arguing? You know? and then and worked it out. So you find ways to, if you focus on the relationships, I think you're going to do better. And I think people will hear you better. You know, you don't walk in on the first day and go, well, we're going to change working conditions. I'm the monitor engineer here. Like, why don't we do this? That's ludicrous. You can't expect that. That would just be foolish and arrogant.
Yeah. And something else that has been brought up in other conversations and that we talked about right before we started recording is also this lack of transparency. Tell me about that.
So there are studies that have been done on the workplace, and I encourage everybody to look into this on in a workplace where people know how much money their coworkers are making, are happier with how much money they're getting paid, even if they're getting paid less. And I think that's important. I don't have a problem discussing it with people. I generally don't budge on how much money I want to make. I like to make people a little bit uncomfortable with it sometimes. I think we should all do that and push the boundaries, because I don't think pay rates have changed a lot in many years on the road. So I do think we're underpaid. And you know, it's just that if you're not communicating with the people in charge and they just want you to be quiet and take it, then there's a problem, and they're not being transparent about why certain decisions are being made. If somebody in charge just goes, look, we have a budget issue and this is the budget I have to meet. Do you want to be involved or not? I respect that much more than them. I'm like, why is catering keep getting worse? Or why are the hotels going down? Are we not selling tickets? Like, what's going on? And again, maybe all of that's not my business, because I don't need to know the accounting for all of this. It really isn't. But at the same time, if they're offering that communication from the top down and you know where they're thinking or where they're coming from, I think we would have more empathy for them and understand why those decisions are being made, even if we don't like the decision, if that makes sense, as far as the transparency goes.
A lot of with the music industry has kind of, it's been things that have been happening over time. Like, it kind of just built on itself, and, you know, the culture became what it was and the norms became what they were because one person did it. And so then people followed suit. But why do you think that became the standard, to kind of just hide things and not talk about things?
I mean, I think that's normal in all lines of business. I don't know if it's different in the music industry. I think that, I don't know how much I'm going to sound like I'm waving a hammer and sickle flag again, but I think if you look at the development of business in the country, like, we are a business-run country. We are a corporate-run country. And even though I do think things are a lot better now, it's, you know, it is set up for the power structure to control everything. The dominant paradigm is in control. This is why you work 2 weeks and then you get paid. You don't get paid and then you work 2 weeks. I mean, it's inherent in the system that we are working for them, and they are making the decisions. And I think most of the time they don't have to consult with us. And it's also an American culture thing. You know, the Japanese car companies became famous many years ago because they were consulting with the lowest people in the company on what improvements they should be making. I believe it was Toyota that did that. That's not an American culture thing. And I think it's sad, number one. And I just think that's how business works. You know, that I've never even met a booking agent. But if the booking agents don't figure out that there are new rules on the buses driving and that we can no longer do 15-hour drives in the U.S., like, they're really going to make our tours more miserable. And we had already, before the pandemic, started to experience this. But we're insulated. Like, I barely know a lot of the managers of the bands that we work for, but they're busy doing other things. So who do I communicate with? It's the production manager. So that we don't all get in the same room and talk. There are no meetings. We might have a loadout meeting, but this is just like, we're all getting together. Come on, show's tomorrow. Get it done. So I don't think there is a lot of time for that communication and their defense. And what are they going to do? Sit around and consult with us? I mean, these things are massive operations that are thrown together. Yeah, there might be months of planning, but there are so many people involved and so many logistics that I think it would be even I think it'd be difficult to be more transparent unless your inherent nature as a production manager, tour manager, or artist is that, if that makes sense. You don't have to be transparent to get it done. These production managers that do big tours, some of them are amazing. Some of them are real assholes, and that's how they get it done. And the artist doesn't know how they're treating the crew. There's no communication on that, usually. In some situations, there is. So I just think it's the nature of business. I mean,
I think you're right. Me too. I'm very much, I like to call myself a progressive. But I have a problem with the way that progressivism happens in this country, or the way that liberalism happens in this country, the way that people think that they can make change happen. And I feel like a lot of the time, the majority of people think that the change happens from the top down. And that's not true.
No, it doesn't. Force is the right word. I would like to just negotiate it rather than try to force it. You know, I don't want to go, hey, crew, guess what? We're not going to load in today. Catering sucks. Let's all put a stop to this. You know, how about just have a conversation? And I think we can do that. I'm not one of the guys in the industry who hates the unions. I understand why they're there, because we would come in and get, you know, $10 an hour labor and never train them. And this is a dangerous working environment. This is a construction site that happens in one day. And when you have untrained people, it's so dangerous. But hey, the millionaires make more money when we do that. I don't make any more money when I work with less trained people. All of the benefit goes to the people at the top. And I'm not a raving socialist, by the way. I'm actually more free market than anybody. I get why they do it. And I don't think they always do that. I think many artists and many management companies, they find ways to bonus people, although I see that happening less. An artist I recently worked for, they do all kinds of nice things with people. Claire Brothers, who's the biggest audio company that's who I started touring with. I know of them taking care of people on a personal level where they get nothing back out of it. They've helped people with immigration situations. They've helped people with rehab situations. They just have done the right thing when it doesn't benefit them financially. It costs them money. And when I see businesses making those decisions, I think that's what's going to make the industry better. That's what's going to make the world a better place. You know, if you want to address mental health, make your working conditions better. Have fun. Don't hire these production managers who are tyrants. Hire the ones who are nice guys, but still get the job done. You know, hopefully we work for the artists who have fun. I'm fortunate to work for one artist who, in fact, he makes me laugh so much. I've looked at him before and go, you have to stop. I'm trying to work over here. And he doesn't care. He would derail the whole show just for a joke, just to say he did it. And so he's creating a work environment that's fun. Right. So that's part of mental health too, because if you're laughing every day and they're hiring people who are just good people to work with, and we can crack jokes. I mean, we're all on this pirate ship together. I certainly hope we can find a way to get along. So that's important. You know, get rid of the toxic people. I'm sorry if there's something wrong in your life. We don't want you back. And a lot of tours do that. So it's great.
Yeah. And, you know, the people who work, you know, who are being hired on to do these things, you know, you can have conversations with each other. You can have transparency between each other. It doesn't always necessarily have to come, you know, from management and things. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, that goes back to the building the relationships. I mean, I have one guy in particular who's one of my best friends. In fact, introduced me to Matt Andrade, who I know is on your podcast. Awesome. One of my favorite people out there. But this other guy's a monitor engineer. He's one of my best friends. And over the past several years, he and I have been up for several gigs together. And we laugh about it because even one was in secret recently. And so he called me and he's like, do you want this gig? I said, yeah, I want it. But if you want it, you take it. He's going, no, I definitely don't want this gig. And when we both want a gig, we don't care if the other person gets it. We just go, well, how much money are you asking for? Well, let's make sure we're asking at least for the same amount of money, because we won't undercut each other. Because that's a terrible thing too. You're going to get you're going to get what you pay for when you do that. And I just think it's those relationships again are more important. We don't care who gets the gig, right? You got the gig, I'll get a different gig at some point. And And I think that makes the industry a better place.
The undercutting could also breed resentment.
Yeah. And we just don't need that. We, you know, I don't have a problem. Like, I got fired from a gig 2 years ago. I had a friend of mine fill in for me, and it's actually a funny story. It was the one I was talking about when they didn't pay me after, and he still got the gig, and he called me, and I was like, "Hey man, I don't know what you did, but I got fired." And it's a whole long story. There's a lot of politics involved. It was time for me to go. The way they did it was shady and terrible, of course. That's how they do a lot of things. I won't say who they are. I'm glad I'm gone. And he called me, or I called him, and he just went, "Look, I want this gig, but I'm not going to take it if you don't want to. Our friendship's too important." And I said, no. Take the gig. Here's how much money I was making. Don't work for less than that. If you take the gig for less than that, then I think what you're doing is wrong. And he went, "No problem." And he got more. And I was like, "Whoa," you know, I was happy for him. He still has the gig. He's still a very good friend of mine. Like, I don't, he did the right thing. He acted with integrity, right? So I think those kinds of things are important. And those of us who believe in transparency, we can model that and we can act like that. Some people won't believe in it and it might not work for them. So I understand that. I don't think everybody should view the industry how I do. I think they should view it however they do. But I do encourage them to think about it and wonder, like, does the lack of transparency, does that benefit the people working or does that benefit the people I call the millionaires? And I honestly think it benefits the people in power because they keep us in the dark. And I don't think they're doing it on purpose most of the time. I think they're just trying to put a tour together and make money. So I don't think there's some sinister conspiracy going on by people, you know, reading William F. Buckley and following the Koch brothers around and doing terrible things and waving Trump flags. I don't think it's that. I think it's just the nature of it. So
something that happens too when you're running things is that you don't have to think about all of the pieces. Right. You just have to think about the project as a whole and just make sure it gets done.
And you also can't. I have empathy. I've seen the workload of a production manager, a tour manager, or even a band manager. I watched a project recently and I was like, you're doing too much. And it affected some things negatively. I love the guy. He's a great dude. And this is kind of where I come from. I think when given the opportunity, I've only seen him do the right thing. I think some things were very wrong with this situation, but that's why I was so conflicted because I'm going, why is all of this so terrible right now? This is not how you do things. I've been working for you for years, you know? And he and I had a conversation and I appreciated what he had to say. And I had, after the conversation, I had so much more empathy because I went, God, this guy's working all day too. It's not that great for him either. So we have to learn from it and the industry has to grow. And again, it's the communication and of course empathy, but being that we're living in a world that is being driven into narcissism and division, I'm a little concerned for our future.
It's being driven. I thought we were already there.
Well, yeah, I've been watching the documentary on Netflix about all the social media and listening to that guy, Tristan somebody. He's really brilliant, worked at Google, and he's just talking about the algorithms. And I was like, oh man, we're in trouble.
Oh yeah, which is why you stay off of social media.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is the first presidential election I haven't spent 6 hours a day on Facebook trying to argue with people because I thought I could convince them of my perspective of things. And I don't think I ever convinced anybody of anything.
No, you just drive them deeper into their beliefs.
It just drives us into more division. And I got that years ago. And I still have a Facebook, but I don't really go on there ever unless sometimes I have an industry question. There are some good groups that I've used and people have been really helpful. But otherwise, I'm not interested. I'd rather look at the birds outside and the pine trees. It's really beautiful. I'm happier.
Good. And, you know, that's honestly good for you. I love that. Now, one of the questions that I think some people may have, because sometimes I forget that a lot of the people that listen to the show aren't necessarily like in the industry yet or have been in the industry for very long. So isn't that where a lot of the undercutting can come from new people trying to get an opportunity? Tell me a little bit about kind of any experience that you've had in that and kind of what you would say to people when they're trying to get their foot in without kind of screwing the whole system, you know, everybody over.
Yeah, I don't see that much undercutting going on. I don't see people saying, well, I'll do the job for less. I just see them accepting the gig for whatever it's offered at. And I think that that again goes to the lack of transparency, that people are going to try to find somebody cheaper. And oftentimes they're not trying to find somebody cheaper. They're trying to find the right person. Sometimes they'll try to get you for cheaper, hold your ground. But I think, you know, new people in the industry, they work for less. I mean, and that's okay. I think that as long as they're not purposely undercutting somebody and trying to, you know, take somebody else's job, like, we just have to act with integrity and have each other's back. You know, when I was a tech, I wasn't interested in stealing the monitor engineer's job who I was teching for. I just wanted to learn. And if that ever came up, then, you have to figure out, oh, that guy got fired. Do I really want this gig? I mean, that was, you know, I've seen those situations a lot. So I don't see younger people necessarily undercutting. I do see some of the companies wanting to pay their labor less. And, you know, I think that it's just a stepping stone. I mean, I worked at Clare Brothers. That was a stepping stone for me to become independent. And I think in the long run, you will get paid what you're worth in the industry.
Do you think that when you're new in the industry, it's important to make an effort toward finding someone who's a veteran that you can trust?
Yeah. Not just someone, as many people as possible, and learn. And, you know, some guys, they're not going to tell you their secrets. But a lot of them do. I mean, I've been so fortunate to work with a guy, Pete Kepler, who's a front of house guy. He would just sit there and talk to me about stuff. And I was pretty new on the road. And I love Pete. And fortunately got to tour with him again years later. Such a good dude. And he would just tell me little things like it wasn't a big deal. Like, oh yeah, I just do this or that. Oh yeah, you know, the time I was working with David Bowie. And I'm like, whoa, you know. And I find that most people, it sort of enjoy that. Of course, there's always the legion of grumpy sound guys you don't want to be around. I mean, we are supposed to be the grumpiest profession, but I think we really benefit from teaching younger people what we can. I mean, my last tour, I had this, I think he's 23 years old. He's just brilliant. And he would just come and hang out and help me. And I was having problems with some wireless stuff. And he goes, well, have you done this or that? And I went, no, I don't know. I didn't know you were supposed to do that. And he just looked at me and it fixed everything. I was like, oh man, come on. I'm taking you out to dinner. You know, these kids, they know the technology, and yes, they need to learn, get the experience and sort of learn how to navigate the people and see how the older people do it. But just because they're younger doesn't mean they have that much to learn all the time. If that makes sense. I mean, they're as much of a resource to older guys as we are to them.
Yeah. And it's almost like the, you know, the vets could definitely share information about kind of how to navigate the culture and things, which when I was teaching, I mean, that was the part that I had trouble with. Cause I'm like, I mean, you know, teaching you how to say basic things in Spanish, like I can do that. Like that's not a problem. But like, how the hell do I navigate this school? Like, why do you guys have so many like weird issues that I can't really understand? Like, why is it a problem if I do X, Y, and Z? And I think maybe those are the sorts of things that people should reach out for help from. And then, like you said, you know, when you're in it and you have younger people who come in who are freshly trained on something, maybe they can help you. So it's like give and take.
Yeah. And you don't know when you're going to be working for them. The relationships are all over the place. And I've always, one of the things I like to say is to, you know, treat the janitor like they're in charge and don't be very nice to the CEO or treat them, you know, they don't have any authority. I do respect authority. I just don't recognize it for anybody. So, you know, you have to be careful with these younger people because they're so valuable and they're so smart. And, you know, guys like me, I started in analog stuff. Well, we moved to digital. I'm fortunate I did that young enough, but these kids coming up, they're making things that I have no idea how to do it. They know all of the new technology. So befriend them, or they could be a threat. Like, they could take your job because they're just better at it, right? They know all of this stuff. But if you just build that relationship and, hey, there's somebody new on tour, it's their first tour. Well, navigating the people, like you're talking about the school, is the biggest challenge. You know, you don't get, it's rare you get fired from a tour because of some kind of gear thing. It's usually a personality thing. And actually, to flip that around, your success is going to be based on if people like you. They don't remember, like, the artist isn't going to remember, oh, that one night in Milwaukee, the mix kind of sounded like shit. No, what they're going to remember is the one night in Minnesota when we were cracking jokes on stage and we were laughing so hard you almost couldn't sing the song, right? And what's it like off the stage? Like, we're having fun. You know, I would rather have a tech that I have fun with than somebody who knows more about the gear. Who cares about the gear? We have to have fun, right? It's more important. And I think if older people can take somebody younger and help them navigate that, like, you're just adding integrity to the industry. Just be a, like, just do a good thing once, you know. If you want management, like I'm saying, all the millionaires, hey, I want them to do good things. Well, I better do good things for somebody else then, or I'm just a raving hypocrite and shouldn't be listened to at all.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely that whole, you know, take care of your own backyard. And I think when people see you doing things, it kind of, I think, gives people permission to do the right thing and to be nice. And
it's cultural, right? Like, you're talking about the culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. I love that.
Yeah. That's so valuable.
Amazing. So we are almost out of time. So I would like to know, what is one of the things that you have been told from somebody that really helps get you through? Like, when you want to call it quits and you've called somebody, you've called one of your mentors, what has taken you off the edge?
Wow. Well, that's a really deep question. I mean, the first thing is to breathe, right? Like, if you're not, I felt myself not breathing as you asked that. I started to tense up to breathe. And, you know, there was a, I'll tell you what it is. There was a young man. He was working in the Claire LA shop. Ugh, his name was Blaine or Blake. I don't even know. He had gone to like India or somewhere, and he came back and we were building racks or something for a tour. And he had said something about, you know, none of this matters. And to this day, that was a few years ago. To this day, I'll be walking around and it's just a shitty day and the load-in sucks and the stage hands are not helpful and everything sucks. And I think I might get fired because one of the artists is unhappy about something. You know, he's lost his voice, can't sing, but thinks that I'm the problem. And I just go, you know what? None of this matters. You know, I worked in mental health with suicidal kids. That matters. Like, your family at home, that matters. Your friends, everybody's health, everybody's safety out there, that matters. But this show, as cool as it is, nope, doesn't matter. Not at all.
Yeah, that perspective. I love it. Well, thank you so, so much, Danny. Have a great night, and I hope to have more conversations with you. Have a great day.
Cool. Thanks for having me. Keep walking your dogs.
That will do. Bye.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Danny Batterini. 1, it's important to be your own best advocate. So stand your ground when you feel like you're not being treated fairly. 2, help to create a culture of transparency between your peers by being open about working conditions and wages. Sometimes change really does come from the bottom up. And 3, do what you can to teach others, but also be open to learning from others, no matter how green they are. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to connect with Danny on LinkedIn. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow the Tour Life on Instagram @thetourlifepodcast.